And it is time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi of the Common Sense Campaign, an adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on 98 in Daphne and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, hello to you, and good morning, Lori. Another glorious day here in South Alabama. You know what? The last 2 weeks, we have really concentrated on China, Taiwan, that whole issue. So I'm really excited about the fact that we're going to have Congressman Mo Brooks on to kind of follow up on those two issues from the perspective of someone who's in Congress and see what his thoughts are on this.
Good.
And then I want to get into several other issues which I think are important, particularly this question of election integrity. And we've been talking about election integrity forever, and so did Mo. I mean, he has been one of the voices crying in the wilderness about this, and I think it's important for us to hear what he has to say about that. We also want to talk about, this whole question of, from an educational standpoint, what's going on with CRT, 1619 Project, and now they've got this Action Civics, okay, which is not really designed to help civics at all, but it's actually going to, deal with things that it looks as though, they have completely taken over with Common Core, and now they want to try to do this through this so-called small D Democratic Action Civics. I also want to talk to him about this whole question about inflation and the economy. I mean, Mo Brooks is an economist, and I think that it's one of these things where we really need to be able to pin down some of these questions about how this is really working. And I do think that, one of the things that we can do is hear from someone like Mo, who has a lot of experience in all this. I mean, frankly, how is it that we have a recession, which is by definition two, no growth quarters, which we've had, and yet you have 500,000 plus jobs, brought into last month? I mean, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, except what you get with this stagflation business, okay? I also want to talk a little bit, if I can, about some of these COVID issues. And then I'd like to finish it up with a question about conservatism in Alabama. So I know that Congressman Brooks is on the line. Morning, Congressman. How are you doing?
Good. How about yourself?
I'm hanging in there, as well as can be expected after the disappointment of us not beating Katie Britt and seeing you as our nominee. And I know that you and I have talked about this, so I'm not going to take too much time with that, other than to say that many of us are hoping that one way or another we will write your name in and we'll figure out a way to get you into the Senate. So we'll just leave it at that for right now. But let's talk about some of these issues that I've already mentioned, okay? This question about China, I've spent the last 2 weeks with Commander D. Cox, who is an expert on it. We've talked about a number of issues, but what I'd like to do is to get your sense of how particularly those members of the, conservative caucus, okay, how do they see China, and is it an existential threat, and what do you foresee happening once the Republicans take back Congress and the Senate?
Well, when you talk about the conservative caucus, to me that's the House Freedom Caucus.
Right.
That's less than 10% of the House of Representatives. So we don't have a majority of the vote on anything. The House Freedom Caucus members, though, we're pretty strong on trying to protect America's interests vis-a-vis the Communist Chinese Party, but we are outnumbered in Washington, D.C. In my opinion, the Communist Chinese Party's influence in the House and the Senate is such that you're unlikely to see anything constructive come through the United States Congress that helps to balance our trade deficit with China, or which helps us militarily versus China.
Well, I mean, if that's the case, it seems like, you know, we'll have to wait for either a Trump or DeSantis presidency, where you get the kind of presidential leadership that you saw, where Trump actually did take some of those issues on. So essentially, as far as the existential threat goes, I mean, do you think it's possible that some of the things that we've seen happening with the Huawei ability to have their kind of communications, you know, close to our bases? One in 2017, they were trying to build something in Washington D.C. that got shut down. But we see these kinds of things out in North Dakota near some of the missile bases that they're building, you know, wanting to put communication centers out there. Is that something that even a compromised Congress could do something about?
Well, we use the word could. Congress can do a lot.
Yeah.
But it's unlikely to do so because congressmen and senators would lose campaign contributions if they do so. Communist China has a very good understanding of the way in which our political system works. They know how to push the buttons to cause various interest groups in America to support the Communist Chinese Party's policies. It might be by way of example, and keep in mind these groups, these entities, they're Americans, they're somewhat patriotic, except to some degree when it comes to their own personal pocketbooks. So you've got Boeing that wants to sell planes, commercial airliners, to Communist China. That gives Communist China leverage over Boeing and what it does with its contributions to candidates for the House and the Senate. Same thing with, say, Big Ag. In Alabama, it would be Alpha. In other states, it would be Farm Bureau. They want to market their agricultural products into Communist China. That in turn gives Communist China influence over Big Ag and Alpha, which in turn affects the ability of congressmen and senators and candidates for those offices to get elected. You saw that in Alabama, and it's the same thing throughout the United States of America. So the American people have to develop the understanding of what's really going on so that they can overcome the influence of these special interests.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, in terms of special interest, there's no question that the BCA and the Chamber of Commerce want cheap labor. So, I mean, right away, you're talking about a massive problem in terms of trying to work against that. But at the local level, let's just say like in North Dakota, I understand that the locals are taking the bull by the horns and saying no to this to the land development and forcing it like that. I mean, is that something that our congressmen from all of these states should be, you know, trying to push the local people to do something about any kind of Chinese attempts to buy property? I mean, I'll give you a good example. You know, you've got, if more than likely, the Space Command is going to be in Huntsville. I mean, shouldn't we kind of make sure that no Chinese entities or people who have relationships with China can buy anything around there? I mean, that's doable.
Well, no, it's not doable except at the federal level. No. You can have some influence from the local level, but the local governments do not have the lawful authority, say a city or a county, to deny an entity its right to purchase property. That would require federal legislation when you are talking about foreign entities, because international relations is uniquely a federal government responsibility. It's not the responsibility of a city or a county commission or what have you. So it's got to be done at the federal level if you're going to have an effective public policy vis-a-vis the Communist Chinese Party. And unfortunately, the Communist Chinese have dominant influence in the United States Congress. And I'll give you just one example. Mitch McConnell. He has profited to the tunes of tens of millions of dollars. This is all public record due to his family's relationships with the Communist Chinese Party.
Yeah.
And yet Kentucky continues to elect him, and Republican senators in the Senate continue to make him our Republican leader. That is a horrible conflict of interest when you're making that kind of money off of family relationships with the Communist Chinese Party. But nonetheless, that's where we are in the Communist Chinese Party. They know how to influence it, and they know how to to take advantage of it.
Well, I mean, take it one step further. I mean, here you have a president who's compromised through his son's business dealings, according to everything that we've seen. I mean, so what you're really saying is that there's a systemic corruption that is pretty much inviolate unless we have someone who's really willing to take it on. Is that basically where we are with this?
Yes, the voters have to do a much better job of doing their homework so that they understand what the true facts are, so that they can make informed decisions independent of the influence that is emanating from special interests, Communist Chinese Party being one of them, that to a large degree dominates public thought. The best way to describe these special interests and the way they control Washington, D.C. is this. They provide the money that enables the candidates to lead the sheep to be fleeced or slaughtered, depending on what the sheep are going to be used for.
Yeah.
And the American people, they're the sheep. And they have to start rebelling, and they have to start doing their homework to figure out that, no, they don't want to be fleeced, and they don't want to be slaughtered. But until they figure that out, we're going to get more of the same, and more of the same is taking America in the wrong direction.
Well, you're not going to get any argument from me on that. I completely agree with it. And I guess we're back to this, you know, education 101, where groups like ours, Common Sense Campaign, other conservative groups throughout the country, and actually Freedom Works is doing things like that through their organization to bring this message out there. And I do think that is a message that has to be there, and it's something that we have to do better at in making sure that people understand this and just be willing to accept the fact that you're going to be called all sorts of names, you know, racist for because it's Chinese, the sky is falling, that Chicken Little business. But I do think that it is incumbent upon us, as you say, as part of the public, to bring that education value or factor much more into the forefront so people understand it better, and we can start illuminating where the problems are and calling it out where it is. Let me just kind of shift to something similar in terms of Taiwan, okay? It's sitting at this point where, on the one hand, you have the history of the Shanghai communique and this whole business of strategic ambiguity, and the fact that Nixon and Kissinger agreed to, you know, one China, two countries, and Hong Kong, to me, is a perfect example of how this is not going to work out well for Taiwan. But nevertheless, is there a sense within the Freedom Caucus that there should be something more definitive and more outlined so that the Chinese understand that if they cross a line there, it's not some little pink line, it is going to be a red line? Or is that something that you feel is just too far beyond where we are in terms of foreign policy, and you're not willing to go down that line with that? Well, I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't often agree with Nancy Pelosi, but I do agree that her visit to Taiwan was important symbolism of America's commitment to a freedom-loving nation.
Yeah.
The House Freedom Caucus, to my recollection, and maybe I've missed something, but to my recollection, they have not taken a position on Taiwan versus Communist China. I suspect that they would side with Taiwan, but I don't know that because I don't recall us having taken a formal vote or a position on that issue. I would hope that Taiwan would have some support or significant support in the House and in the Senate, but to date, I've just not seen it.
Is that something that you want to bring up when you get back to Washington with the Freedom Caucus? I mean, it seems like it's a pregnant issue. It seems like it's a pregnant issue.
In a couple of months, I won't even have an office.
Yes, I know that, Mo.
Staff is down to two.
You are still a voice.
People are seeking jobs, so I'm going to do what I can as the lame duck status takes a greater and greater diminishing effect on my influence in the United States. Don't get me wrong. I still have influence in the United States Congress. I still have my vote. But it's just not the same when you're a lame duck versus someone that's going to be around for a while.
Right.
It affects your relationships with people, and it affects your ability to influence how other people are going to vote. That's just the way it is with presidents, with senators, and with congressmen. I would love for us to become more aggressive but I have not seen the kind of aggressive nature that is necessary to deter Communist China from attacking Taiwan with all of the cascading adverse effects that will result from that.
Well, let me ask
you. That Communist China does not like our Bill of Rights, which is a foundational set of principles that guide us as a country. The Bill of Rights basically says that the individual is supreme, not the government, the individual. And the Communist Chinese Party is the exact opposite. It is the government that is supreme, not the people.
Well, listen, I completely agree with that. But here's the thing. I mean, it seems like if you've got a situation where, on the one hand, we have, you know, a small d democratic country which has evolved into a notable democracy, particularly in that region, then it seems like there are, you know, valid philosophical arguments to move in the direction of helping them. I mean, we've sort of done that with other countries. I mean, we're trying to help Ukraine retain its position as a small d democracy.
That's true, Lou, but some of our conservatives, led by the Trump element, don't like us helping Ukraine.
They prefer us
help Putin.
Right. I get that.
Or stand aside, and by standing aside, helping Putin.
Well,
and
I mean,
so that's very troublesome to me that we've got so many conservatives that have adopted the Trump line that in turn results in some of these dictatorial entities like Russia wanting to expand in Eastern Europe. And the more they expand, the stronger they get, the longer term, greater threat they are.
Right. I agree with that. Where I was going with the philosophical part of defending Taiwan is that the abstract philosophical position, I think, is obviously solid grounds. We've done it, you know, we've used that argument many times over. But there is a pragmatic side of this, which basically says Taiwan supplies us all sorts of important, you know, resources, you know, for, you know, any number of things from the technological field. And it just seems to me that it's in our self-interest to make sure that China does not just absorb that and create more dependence problems for us along the lines of what you see in the pharmaceuticals that we have such a dependency on and other things like that. I mean, is there an argument that can be made that the Freedom Caucus will kind of get itself lit up a little bit if that argument is made? Do you think?
Again, you've got congressmen and senators, and presidents for that matter, being a function of campaign contributions.
Yeah.
You saw it in the Senate race I was just engaged in, where we were outspent by the forces of darkness, let's call them, special interests, dishonesty, and they outspent us 3 or 4 to 1, maybe 5 to 1. And to get that kind of money, you have to pledge certain things to special interests that are contrary to the interests of the United States of America. That's why they're called special interests. They're not the general interests of our country. They're special interests.
Right.
And congressmen and senators have learned over time that you can pound your opposition into submission. You can lie and get away with it about your opposition if you have enough money with which to do so. And if your money does, excuse me, and if your opponents do not have the money with which to respond. And so that was the situation I was just in a United States Senate race. And members of Congress saw what happened. Members of the United States Senate saw what happened. That makes them even more reliant on the special interest. And a large part of special interest contributions is in accord with the wishes of the Communist Chinese Party.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, just to touch on that for a second. As you look at that kind of an issue where you've got this dominant China influencing these people, how do we break this? I mean, in the end, you know,
we could start in Alabama. I've been working hard to get rid of these Confucius Institutes, where we have been warned by our security forces that they are basically depots for Communist Chinese Party influence, whether it be spying and other subterfuges along those lines, or whether it be propaganda and marketing of the Communist Chinese Party, that we're less likely to react. Fortunately, we were able to persuade Alabama A&M University to close its Confucius Institute, which is right next to our high-tech military facility at Redstone Arsenal, But you've got Troy University that persists in operating their Confucius Institute. This is in our own state.
So
we've got to do a much better job of diminishing the influence of Communist Chinese Party in Alabama before we start focusing on the United States of America. If we can't clean up our own backyard, how are we going to clean up the country's backyard?
Well, I agree with that. Let me ask you this. In terms of talking to Troy University, who was involved with actually talking to them so that we can have some idea of who we need to start pushing on? Or do we all just say, we'll just call Troy's president and said, what the hell are you doing?
I was. I've been trying to put pressure on them for 2 to 3 years, same as I did with Alabama A&M. Alabama responded to public influence and desires. Troy University responded to the Communist Chinese Party's money.
Okay.
That's why the Confucius Institute is there. It's a cash cow for Troy University. And you better believe the Communist Chinese Party are only spending that kind of money because they believe that there is a profit to be made on behalf of their Communist Chinese Party goals.
Exactly. All right, well, let's kind of take it down to, since we're talking about Alabama, this question of election integrity. I know that when you were here in 2021, we asked you to speak at our Stand Up Alabama rally, and you mentioned the problems associated with the 2020 election, including in detail what happened in Arizona. But the question about Dominion machines, if I'm not mistaken, you basically said you wanted to see more of the evidence about Dominion and how the role that they played. So here we are now, a year and a half after our March 21, you know, rally where you talked about that. What is your sense of, A, the Dominion machines, you know, responsibility in terms of some of the problems that we've seen with 2020, and then B, do you think adequate steps have been taken to ameliorate, if not knock out, the ability of, you know, these battleground states, which were, that's where the big issue was, if they can actually defend themselves against the kinds of problems that we saw in 2020 with the drop boxes, you know, with the mail-ins and all the rest of it?
I've had a lot of communications directed at me and a lot of theories presented to me about the Dominion machines, generally other voting machines that are electronic. To me, what's lacking is the kind of evidence that is needed to establish without any doubt that there are problems with the way in which these machines count the ballots. There's some statistical data, but the best data is very simply this. Have audits, random audits of machines around the state of Alabama, where after the election is over with, you've got the computer printout as to what they say the results were in a particular voting precinct. And then you ought to have a hand count to see if the hand count matches the computer count. And if there's a disparity, well, then that is the best evidence you could hope to get that there's a problem with the machines and their programs. That's what I want to see.
Okay.
And to me, the effort of the legislature has been rather minimal to address this potential issue. They have not implemented legislation that gives the scope of audits, random audits that I'd like to see of these machines. And if the machines are working fine, then the audits will establish that, and that will give voters greater confidence in the outcome of the reported election results. But if the machines are not operating fine, and you've got these random audits where you have hand count that established without any doubt that the machines are saying one thing, and that one thing does not correspond with what the voters actually decided, now that's powerful evidence. So I would hope that the legislature would not be minimalistic, but instead have a significant random audit program that happens every year in which there is an election, happens with every election, some percentage of machines that are audited to determine whether they are accurately reporting the wishes of the voters who participated in that election.
Well, let me ask you this. Can't the Secretary of State do that on his own? Seems to me that that's a question that's been...
No.
He has to have all authority, or is that just a money issue to fund these kinds of audits?
It's an issue of the United States Constitution. United States Constitution, Article 1, Section 4, called the Election Clause, gives total power over the, quote, times, places, and manner, end quote, of elections to the legislature and to the United States Congress, and nobody else. So it has to be a specific act implemented by the state legislature and the United States Congress to require these audits, or else we get into the situation we saw with Georgia in 2020, where it had mass mail-out ballots. Why? Because the Secretary of State and a state court judge decided that way.
Well, yeah.
Neither of them have the power to do it according to the United States Constitution.
Well, yeah, but that wasn't the only place that happened, okay? But, okay, so we have federal elections. Well,
the problems in Georgia, to a very large degree, emanated from the mass mail-out of ballots in violation of the United States Constitution, rendering those ballots cast illegal.
Okay.
There were millions, if not tens of millions, of ballots that were cast in violation of the United States Constitution, Article 1, Section 4, because it was not the United States Congress and it was not the Georgia State Legislature setting up the mass mail-out program that the Secretary of State did on his own.
I got that. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, Raffensperger and Kemp, I believe, are just part and parcel of the whole conspiracy against Trump, okay? But I don't want to get into that right now. What I'd like to be able to find out, though, and I know you and I have talked about this, Raffensperger, as my understanding, that he kept the drop boxes but got away from the videos that were used in 2000 Mules. So, I don't know if you've had a chance to do this. I know that we had talked about it. Have you talked to your Georgia colleagues about why in the world Raffensperger, you know, would do something as stupid as keeping the drop boxes, but then making sure that there's no way that you can ensure that these things are actually not being manipulated?
I can't answer that. I can't read Raffensperger's mind.
Right. Well, I guess the point that
I can say that we don't want our Secretary of State and we don't want Georgia's Secretary of State to unilaterally adopt policies that impact the, quote, times, places, and manner, end quote, of elections, because that power is reserved to legislatures and the United States Congress.
Right.
But even if the Secretary of State comes up with a good idea, like random auditing of the machines to make sure that the machine counts are accurate, we don't want our Secretaries of State to do that unilaterally, because that violates Article 1, Section 4 of the United States Constitution. We want our legislatures to do that. That's where the power resides.
Right. Now, but that's only for federal elections. On state elections, Merrill could do that on his own. Isn't that right?
Well, every state election is a federal election, unless it's a special state election, like a vacant legislative seat where somebody's died or resigned.
Okay.
Because every state general election has congressmen on the ballot, too.
Right. But I'm just talking about...
Now, city councils could do it differently, and because they have their own election days.
Okay. All right, so Raffensperger and Kemp, to me, are part of the problem, along with several other people are out there. But let's just kind of... I know that Laurie's always been nice about giving me a few extra minutes, and so I'm willing to buy extra time, Laurie. She's smiling at me here, okay? So let's just kind of shift to election integrity. You know, it's an ongoing issue, which I think is clearly, you know, something that has to be taken care of if we're going to have any sense that, you know, the elections are really, you know, above board. And I think your ideas about moving in the direction of, you know, doing the audits is something that we have to do. There's no question about that. Let me just ask you this in terms of, you know, COVID, and here again we get back into the actual use of the COVID excuse to foster, you know, Stacey Abrams and her consent decree in Georgia, which opened up, as you say, the doors to all of the problems that existed. Okay, is there a case for looking further into making sure that that a COVID excuse, whether it's monkeypox or something like that, is not going to be used again to facilitate the kinds of abuses that we saw. Is that something that, that you think the Freedom Caucus is interested in doing?
Well, let's be clear. That was a bipartisan problem. It started at the top with Donald Trump and Fauci. They scared the willies out of the American people back in the springtime of 2020. And that set the stage for the Democrats seizing that crisis and taking advantage of it. It's the old Rahm Emanuel quote, who used to work for Barack Obama, perhaps Bill Clinton, and also was mayor of the state of Chicago, of the city of Chicago for a while. Never let a good crisis go to waste.
Yeah.
And so Donald Trump and his administration were all in on scaring the American people. The news media, of course, jumped all over that because they like to hype these kinds of things. That causes more people to want to watch or view their news. And the Democrats saw a way to turn it to their advantage with a mass mail out of ballots in direct conflict with the report of the Bipartisan Commission on Federal Election Reform back in 2005.
Right.
So it was a bipartisan failure. The House Freedom Caucus, we don't like it, but again, keep in mind, we're less than 10% of the House of Representatives. 10% doesn't win a vote. 51% wins a vote.
Okay.
And so the public's just got to do a better job of choosing Republican nominees who are actually going to do what they say they're going to do. That's what the Freedom Caucus is all about. Come January 3rd, though, there's only one Freedom Caucus member in the House of Representatives, and that's Barry Moore. That's it. I was the other one. I was the founder of the House Freedom Caucus.
Right.
I'll be out of the House of Representatives and out of Congress due to the decision of Democrats and independents on our Republican primary election day on May 24th, follow up with the runoff.
Right. Okay, let me ask you this. If the pandemic was used in a fearful way, and so, you know, we saw the results of that, is it not the same thing, the same case could be made that the vaccine itself was used in a way to provide a relief from instantaneous death, I'm being exaggerating, with COVID. And in the end, what we've seen with the vaccines is that now, you know, we're losing. The latest thing here was 40,000 National Guardsmen refused to get the shot, and they are going to be let go. Where I'm going with this is the vaccines are not sufficient. They don't work. I mean, Biden is a good example of that. And the argument here is we're still forcing people to have vaccines. And the passport issue is something which, you know, is out there. I know that we tried to get our state legislature to pass HB 31, which would have given real teeth to your individual protection not to have to take the jab. But that went by the by. So I guess my point here is, is the Freedom Caucus willing to stand up and say absolutely hell no to any more of these vaccine, you know, passport business and help our service people who don't want to take the jab?
We have been leading that fight in Congress, but again, we're in the minority. You're in the minority, you don't win votes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess the question is that even though, you know, you are in the minority, this may be the time to just use the bully pulpit. I mean, I haven't heard anybody on the Republican side stand up and say anything about these 40,000 National Guardsmen who don't want to take the jab. And it seems to me that that is a national security issue.
Well, that's
issue.
The function of the news media. One of the problems with being a conservative is that the news media does not replicate what you say. So the public doesn't know who said it. It's about like there's an old philosophy question, if you ever took philosophy in college. If a tree falls and no one's around, did it make any noise?
Yeah, I got that. And I did take my philosophy courses and blah, blah, blah. So, but I do think that, you know, that this issue, I know at the state level, we are going to press forward with you know, the end of passports. So, Lori's giving me the high sign here, Congressman. So let me just say thank you very much for coming on. I appreciate your time and your efforts. I know you're going to have a vacation here in a few weeks, and I wish you well on that. I wish you well on everything you do, because you deserve our support, and I think that, you know, in the coming weeks we will see that that desire to support you manifested in other ways. So take care, Congressman, and thanks for coming on.
And thank you, Lou, for all you have done for our conservative cause and for our country. I just wish we had a whole lot more like you. America would be a much better place.
Yeah, well, some people down here think I'm Dr. Lunatic, yeah. So I don't know if they'd be happy with that.
I could say that about both of you.
Oh, okay.
Thank you both,
right.
Gentlemen, okay. So much.
Thank you, Lori.
Y'all
all right, Congressman.
Take care and have a blessed day.
Okay,
uh-huh.
Talk to you later. Thank you so much. Well, Lori, you know, it really is. It's so frustrating to see the influence of Communist China's money, and what we are going to do about it is something which we've got to go back and take a closer look at, you know, the building blocks of all this and how we can just undercut and undermine this money. And I think that in part it is an education issue, but in part it is an alternative way to do business. And I think that that's something that we're going to have to look carefully at and kind of start thinking out of the box, whatever that means. So, Miss Lori, so
very
it's the
good.
8th of August. Next week is what? The 15th, halfway through August.
And we'll see you next week.
God
Time's
willing,
fine.
We'll see you next week. Y'all
Thank
take
you so
care.
Much.
All right, y'all take care. Bye.
You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review, brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on 98 in Daphne and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. If you missed part of this program or you want to tell a friend, you can listen later at WABF1480.com. Now resuming regular programming.